Hello, it's Lena Dunham. I host a podcast called The C Word with my dearest friend and historian of bad behavior, Alyssa Bennett.
What is up?
It's a chat show about women whose society is called crazy.
We're going to be rediscovering the stories of women society dismissed by calling them mad, sad, or just plain bad.
Listen to and follow The C Word with Lena Dunham and Alyssa Bennett. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Giants.
You're listening to the best of the Giants.
And the Giants have won!
A weekly mix of WFAN Sports Radio 101.9's best NFL talk to get you ready for game day.
You know that football season is back when certain callers jump in. There's guys that only call during football season or when football stuff's going on, and this is one of them, and he is a great Giants fan who calls this show. I think we probably heard from him around the draft, but now we're probably going to hear from him every week because he's got good takes on his team. That's Conrad in Cherry Hill. What's going on, Conrad?
Oh, man. Thank you, G. I appreciate that.
Well, you're welcome, Conrad. I'm trying to be in a good mood before I tell you Giants are going to suck again.
But I'm here to tell you, I got a hot take for you.
Ooh.
I think that my Giants are going to win the division.
Okay, and
I'm going to tell you the reason why. Booms, looking at the game yesterday, I saw the lack of Michael Parsons and the Dallas defense. They really were not able to get that pressure that they needed to Jalen Hurts. That's one part of that. I think the second part, when I'm looking at the Eagles now, you look at their defense has been, you know, hit with some of the people that they've lost, whether it be Graham that retired, and you look at their defensive line. Now, I know Carter was thrown out, but it still doesn't resemble that defense that we saw last year. I know in the beginning of the year, defenses are typically ready to go more or less in the offenses. So when I look at my team, I think that my team is going to be able to compete in this division. I think Burns is going to have a career year. And I think the pressure that we're going to be able to, you know, bring to the quarterback is going to allow our defensive backs to really have a great year. We spent a lot of money this offseason in the backfield, so in our secondary. So I definitely think that the Giants are primed to take over this division. Washington is going to be competitive, but I think that they're a little bit older than the Giants as far as defensive-wise and offense. But that's my take on this, hot take. I think that the Giants are going to win the division, and I am so pumped up.
Well, listen, I don't know if you're a gambling man. I'm glad that you're pumped up, and good luck to you on Sunday. But if you really believe the Giants are going to win the division, you could put a small amount on that and win a large amount of money.
Yes.
So I'm not encouraging you to go and gamble if you don't want to.
Yes.
But if you really believe that, I think even $10 could win you a significant amount of money.
The most important position in football is the quarterback. And let's face it, the three teams, two of them we saw last night, and of course Jaden Daniels, what I expect him to be this year. You know, those three teams have better quarterback situation than the Giants do right now. And that's no slight at Russell Wilson or Jackson Dart or Jameis Winston. It's just reality that these other guys are all in their primes. And the fact is that you're talking about a second-year superstar in Jaden Daniels, who I do believe is going to take the next step. So I understand where Conrad's coming from. I do believe that they are going to be better than their 5.5 win projection. I think that they're going to be better on defense. I think they could have one of the best pass rushing teams in the NFL. That's how good I think they are. And especially with Dexter Lawrence, you know, kind of anchoring that defensive line, I'm pretty bullish on the fact that, like Conrad said, the secondary is going to be better too.
All right, now, listen, Vegas gets things wrong, but it gives you a sense of what people think about teams,
I know,
right?
All right, yeah, so, but you never know. Did we think that Jalen Carter was going to get thrown out of the game?
No. I'm just talking about a team situation here.
Right.
And injuries happen, whatever. I'm just giving you a flavor of where Vegas thinks the Jets and Giants are.
Give us a little flavor.
All right, so the team that is Vegas believes is the least likely to win their division in the entire NFL.
Saints.
No. That's not a great division, so that's probably why.
Giants?
No, the Giants are tied for second.
The team that's So it's not somebody from the NFC South. Let's go with the Raiders.
No, the Raiders are, they got a big number. They're plus 1,100. They're
Seattle?
Like, no, Seattle is plus 550.
Jets.
The Jets are also tied for second.
God.
So the
I still have found the first team. What am I missing?
You know this. You're just having a brain fart. You know this 100%. Think about the worst quarterback situations in the game.
I said the Saints.
I know. Think the second worst. They get a team that never wins.
They're the Browns.
Yeah. All right. So the Browns are the, according to Vegas, the least likely to win their division.
You know, I don't even think of the Browns. That's why, like, I don't even think
right.
of them.
I know. You're right. The few people do. So the FanDuel Sportsbook has the Browns at plus 3,000 to win the division, the least likely. And then the second least likely, they have the Jets and the Giants, both tied at plus 1,700 to win their divisions. And even the New Orleans Saints have better odds to win their division than both the Jets and Giants.
That's just because, you know, nobody believes in that division. That's why.
Well, it's true. That's a big part of it. If you put the Saints near the NFC or AFC East, they probably have worse odds than the Jets and Giants. But still, it shows you where you're at with these two teams. So if Conrad really believes in the New York Giants to win the division, let's see. I'll click on that. Let's say he wanted to bet. I mean, even $10 wins you $170. I mean, why not, right? I mean, if you had $100 to spare and the Giants win the division, $1,700.
Did you see Jalen Hurts just creating plays last night?
With his legs?
I mean, just creating plays, extending plays. I mean, they still should have lost the game if Miles Sanders doesn't fumble and, you know, CeeDee Lamb does what he gets paid to do. And that's just catch the football.
Mm.
I mean, that's really what it, you know, there's 5 or 6, 7 plays coaches believe that determine the outcome of these games. And this is another one-score game. And to me, Dallas looked the part, at least on offense. In the second half, it was hard to watch that game because not a lot of things were happening. I think maybe the delay took whatever momentum the game had out of it, and maybe they're not ready to play 4 quarters yet. But I will say Dallas looked better than they looked like they should have looked in the first half offensively. Like, Dak was making plays.
He was. And him being back, it cannot be understated.
You can't blame him for CeeDee Lamb dropping passes.
Right. Or Miles Sanders.
Fumbling. And that's all it took, one turnover.
Yeah. I mean, they're right down there on the one after the personal foul in the end zone. unnecessary roughness. And then they get a penalty. And then, obviously, the turnover. It's just, that's
turnovers
why I said.
And penalties. That's why Aaron Glenn is saying, look, no more penalties. And we got to force turnovers. Same thing for the Giants.
Yep. The Giants and the Jets. Here we go again. Excited to see them play. And maybe we get a shocker. Oh, yeah. WFAN NFL football is powered by Verizon.
Ooh, look at that.
Boomer and
so
Geo.
I'm going to ask you a real quick question before we go to the break. We got 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 new head coaches, 6 new head coaches in the league, 7 new head coaches in the league.
Mm-hmm.
Ben Johnson, Schottenheimer last night, Liam Cohen, Pete Carroll, Mike Vrabel, Kellen Moore, Aaron Glenn. Who has the best record out of those 7 guys?
I mean, it's Vrabel.
Not even close. Even with Liam Cohen down there in Jacksonville?
I don't believe in that guy.
Duval!
I cannot predict positive things for that man. Can't do it.
I mean, what about Brian Schottenheimer?
He
looked the part last night.
He would be my second choice?
Yeah.
I'm going to say Vrabel. I'm going to say
Ben Johnson?
I can't do that.
That guy knows the Bears.
Can't do it. But I mean,
J.J. McCarthy on the road at the Bears this week.
Mm-hmm.
Ooh, baby.
Yeah, I'm
you
not
excited. You're a little nervous.
No, I'm
your hands clammy.
Expectations are low.
Are your hands clammy?
My hands are not clammy. I don't get clammy for clammy hands for NFL football anymore. I get clammy hands when I'm standing over a downhill chip, but not for NFL football any longer.
The NFL season kicks off tonight in Philadelphia with the Eagles taking on the Cowboys. That's on WFAN-FM tonight at 8:20 with Westwood One's coverage. Tomorrow, the Chiefs face the Chargers in Brazil. As for the two local teams, so you've got the Giants in Washington. Here is your guy, Gio Russell Wilson, how he sees things here with the Giants in his short time here so far.
Well, I think that what we've been evolving, and not necessarily changing, but I think definitely evolving, is just our mindset. You know, I think mindset's everything. I think belief is everything.
And so they believe.
Think he's going to be a pain in the ass if they sit him down like in the first month of the season for Jackson Dart?
Yeah.
Look, he's a prideful player, man. He wants to play. He sees himself as a starter. He's been a Super Bowl winner. He's put up huge numbers. He's got a Hall of Fame career. I mean, that's a tough thing. That would be a really tough thing.
So yeah.
And I think outwardly he would probably be a good teammate and say the right things, but I think inwardly he would probably be really annoyed.
Think he would ask for a trade if there was a team out there that needed a quarterback?
That might happen. That could happen. I'm surprised that Jameis didn't ask for a trade.
He seems to like it here.
He likes it here, but he's third string. And, you know, I mean, that's an asset that you have that you could trade.
Here was Malik Nabers. So while the Giants will look different on offense because of Russell Wilson, here's Nabers talking about Abdul Carter and can't wait to see him do his thing.
But I think he's going to show everybody why, you know, we picked him at that high. He's going to show, you know, all his athleticism, you know, all his power moves and stuff like that. He's going to make some tackles. He's going to run down some people. So I'm excited to see it.
Can he keep up with Jaden?
Sorry. Yes, go ahead.
So I would think that if I were playing against Abdul Carter and all this buzz around him, and rightfully so, I'm not saying it doesn't deserve it. He does deserve it. But he got his ass handed to him when they played the Jets, right? You saw that because he wasn't aware of what they were doing and what's happening. If I'm the Commanders, as soon as he's on the field, I am running at him every single time. And I want to see if you can run defend. I know what you can do pass-wise, you know, pass-rushing-wise. I want to see if you can run defend.
Yeah. Go right at him. Push him down to the ground
just
like the Jets did. Welcome to the NFL. Rookie.
All that kind of thing. Stuff. Yeah.
And if not, they can trade him to Washington for two first-round picks and a run defender.
Yeah.
Well, that's what Dexter Lawrence is in there for.
I know. The Dolphins take on the Colts on Sunday. So you had a whole, you had a very weird offseason with Tyreek Hill, as we know, and with Tua. Here was Tua. How are you two doing right now going into week one?
I would say it's good. I think for what it was earlier in the summer was just that, and I think people might have blown it out of proportion.
And that's exactly.
Tua Tagovailoa.
Yeah, but like what did we blow out of proportion? He was the one that said that Tyreek had a mend fences, didn't he?
Well, maybe. Here's what Hill says, though. Tua's right. You guys are the ones that made this a bigger story.
I mean, that's typically what you guys do, blow it out of proportion. You know what I'm saying? That's kind of. You know, the views and, you know, it gets spread all over the internet. But at the end of the day, like, me and Tua know exactly where we stand at.
He said they're brothers.
All right. I mean, but it all.
Blown out of proportion.
I mean, he wanted a trade. Yeah, just like Jalen Ramsey wanted a trade.
He said, like, I'm out of here. I think he said, like, that specific quote, like, I'm out of here.
He did.
At the end of the season.
They just printed it.
Yeah.
they did.
Blown it out of proportion.
It's like, yeah. Eddie, I'm out of here.
No. Soon. I did notice that it was awful. Someone posted that you started with Craig, you know, however many years
today.
Ago.
Like, today. This is the day. Is the day.
And so, obviously, Chris Olivero and Mark Chernoff were very instrumental in all of that, putting you guys 100%. Together.
You would think that they would have some sort of, like, you know, breakfast for us or something. Nothing.
Nothing. No, nothing.
Nobody cares. I tell you guys.
No, wait. We care.
I'm not saying you guys
Al cared. He texted you. I opened the show with it the other day.
No,
I mean, we care.
I'm not saying that you don't care. I'm
we
just
care.
Saying, outside of the five of us, maybe CeeLo. I'll throw CeeLo in there and maybe Schwartz. And that Willie Colon now.
Yeah, for sure.
I think. But, you know, that's it. Nobody else cares.
No one else cares.
You think the other side cares? Not the other side. You think upstairs cares? No.
Well, I mentioned Chernoff. I'd like to congratulate him. I didn't realize he had a daughter. I mean, we know his son is the GM of the Guardians.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize his long-lost daughter that I maybe...
Long lost daughter. Wow.
Iga Swiatek, whatever.
Yeah.
She lost last night. And this is where I noticed they were related.
It's been a lot of tennis the last few weeks. Wimbledon, the American tournaments leading up to this, that, now this. How tired are you at the moment?
Well... well...
You crack yourself up.
Well, let me think of that.
Is that the first thing that you thought of?
Yes. It's exactly the first thing I thought about. Are you kidding me? Oh, that was kind of, it was very Chernoff like.
So,
have a seat. You're an idiot. You can leave now.
Oh, man. So congratulations to Mark. NFL Commissioner Roger Goodell on the Today Show with this announcement about Taylor Swift.
We would always love to have Taylor play. She is a special talent, and obviously she would be welcome at any time.
Is it in the works?
I can't tell you anything about that.
Is it a maybe?
It's a maybe.
I think they mean halftime at the Super Bowl.
Of course. So. Definitely coming. Why not get married time too? Why not do that too as well?
You could.
Biggest wedding of all time.
They could charge us for that as well.
Yes.
I make halftime pay-per-view.
Yeah, right.
God almighty. So funny. What else? The NBA investigating claims that Clippers owner Steve Ballmer had one of his companies pay Kawhi Leonard $7 million a year for a no-show endorsement deal. We talked about this yesterday. The new wrinkle to this would be Mark Cuban. Posted on X that he does not believe Ballmer is, quote, that stupid, and there's no way he did this. And so you've got Pablo Torre inviting Cuban to come on his show.
I'll tell you
one,
if he did do it, the NBA's got to come down, I mean, just really, really hard. You can't allow that to happen. You just can't.
Like when Pablo Torre shows up at your door, it's like that dude from To Catch a Predator these days. I'm like, oh boy.
What did we do?
Yeah.
That's a very good point. And I mentioned Sweet Tech. She did lose to American Amanda Anisimova in the U.S. Open, so she advances to the semifinals.
Joining us right now, a guy who's ready to go Sunday in Washington, Tyrone Tracy.
Yeah. How y'all doing? Appreciate y'all having me out here.
Thank you for coming on. Are you ready?
I'm more than ready. I'm excited.
We have something that we have to ask you. We saw a tweet today.
All right.
Boy, what a buildup. I'm nervous now.
I'm just saying. It's a tweet. There's nothing bad about it. It's just interesting.
I'm ready.
We get enamored in this city when there are unique nicknames. Back in my day, I had a Thunder and Lightning. Yeah. It was me and Ron Dane.
Okay.
It was pretty good. Worked pretty effectively. I had 1,000 yards. He rushed for 800 yards. Went to the Super Bowl. It was awesome. In fact, the first game of that season, it thundered and lightning in the stadium. We had to pause the game. It was amazing. It's Arizona Cardinals. I'll never forget it. We saw something today
What'd you see?
It was, be ready. We're 2 days away, something along these lines. I'm paraphrasing. From the debut of Cookies and Cream. Is that what we're calling you now?
Nah, I don't know who came up with that one. I ain't gonna lie. I don't know who came up with the Cookies and Cream. I mean,
it's kind of dope, though.
I'm about to say, if it sticks, I'm cool with it. You know what I'm saying? I don't know what the fans think, but if the fans love it, you know, we can do it.
Tyrone and Cam, Cookies and Cream, y'all like that?
I don't know.
The ice cream is, know. I mean, that's one of the best flavors, though.
Cookies and Cream, I done heard salt and pepper.
Yeah, but that's done. That's like, they had a group.
We were thinking about Thunder and Lightning, but you took that already. So.
But you can't be Thunder and Lightning.
Why not?
Because y'all are the same.
No, he's 240.
How excited are you for this season to start? I mean, you surprised a lot of people last year. You had just under 200 carries, rushed for 839 yards, 5 TDs. You were a marvel. I love watching you run. In fact, I was calling that Seattle game when you had your breakout game. But how excited are you to follow up what you did a year ago?
I mean, like I said, man, I'm more than excited, to be honest. Like, I'm just ready to get back out there because, to be honest, like a lot of people talk about, you know, the past, what I did, you know, previously, and it really doesn't matter. You know, what I did past year in college last year, it really don't matter. You know, what matters is right now. And I'm ready to go back out there and show these fans, show my teammates, show myself that, you know, it wasn't a one-off. You know, I can go out there and do it again. But it, like I said, you got to start fast. So it's all going to start, you know, on Sunday.
So much of doing what you do and what I used to do is instinctual, and you learn it from doing it. You're still kind of learning this, right? You've only been a running back for a couple of years now.
Yeah.
How much more or how much better can you get?
I think the sky's the limit, to be honest with you. I really don't think there's, like, a limit to how good I can be. Like, I want to be the best running back in the NFL, like, period, point blank. But I know, you know, where I'm at right now is not going to cut it. So each and every day I have to get 1% better, you know, whether it's, you know, catching a ball, running a ball, you know, seeing a hose correctly, like, whatever it may be. Like, there's a lot of things, you know, within my game that I can get better at. And each and every time I step on a green, man, I'm trying to get better at something.
Tell me about the relationship with you and Cam. Because sometimes athletes will look at a guy drafted at his position as a threat.
Yeah.
When really it should be motivation, right? And it should be the whole cliche iron sharpens iron type of thing. Tell me about your relationship with Cam.
Yeah, I mean, it's dope. I mean, me and Cam, we butt heads sometimes, you know, but we go back and forth. But at the same time, like, he wants to be great. I want to be great. I won't say completely opposites, but, like, we're opposites. Like, he's very out loud, vocal, yelling. Like, I'm very cool, calm, chill, laid back, like, mentally focused on it, on whatever I got going on. Like, I'm outgoing, but, you know, in certain situations, you know, but when it's ball, I'm playing ball. Cam is, like, he's a vocal leader. I'm a leader as in, like, my actions are going to speak, you know. You can look at me and see, like, okay, Tyrone was doing the right thing. I want to do what he do.
Right.
But our relationship, man, it's great. It really is. It was great. Like, we bounce ideas off of each other. You know, I let him know, you know, obviously what he can do better. He lets me know, you know, what I can do better. Cause I feel like as a leader, you got to learn to follow. You know, you can't just be a leader all the time. Like, right. To be a good leader, you have to be a great follower. You got to know when to lead, but you also got to know when to follow. And like I said, Cam gives good advice. I give good advice. But I think he'll be a really good football player, man. I really do.
What do you guys butt heads about out of curiosity?
A lot, man. It's a lot of stuff. It's a lot of stuff that goes on. You know, he doesn't sometimes, you know, he has rookie duties. You know, I was a rookie last year, so, you know, you best believe I'm going to make him do the rookie duties that I was doing last year. So, I mean, but he's been pretty well about it so far. You know, he gets us our snacks. Tomorrow's the first day, you know, of a away game. So, you know, rookies, they got to come in with our lunch.
What do you want them to get?
Oh, yeah.
In my day, I think it was Popeye's chicken that guys would come with.
That's what I do. Go get me a four-piece spicy. Go get me the fries. Make sure I got the lemonade on the side. If you miss it, hey, it's going to be something wrong with you. I don't know what's going to happen. I might mess with your car, something.
Are you guys able to do that to Abdul Carter, too? Like, is he getting rookied or is he exempt?
I'm not. That's got to talk to Byron Burns, talk to Kayvon Thibodeau. Gotcha. That's them. I'm Scat. That's me. Cam Scataboo. Yeah, that's my rook.
Other than the lack of duties you have, because you're no longer a rookie, you're a sophomore, what's the biggest difference going into the start of this season as compared to your rookie season?
I would say my confidence, man. Like, I feel really good at where I'm at. When I'm out on the field, I'm not, you know, thinking so much. I think last year, man, when I was in there, especially the first couple of games, man, I was just trying to do whatever the play was supposed to do. I wasn't trying to make a play.
Right.
If the play said run right, I'm running right. Like, that's it, period, point blank. And then once we got towards the end of the season, man, like, I was no longer trying to make a mistake. I was, you know, making a play. I was trying to go out there and make a play, like, make an explosive play. And I think that is where I'm at now. Like, every time I step on the field, every time I touch the ball, like, I want it to be an explosive play. Like, somehow, some way, like, even if it's pad protection, like, I want that to be an explosive play, you know, that come out of that. Like, whatever it may be. Like, I think that, you know, when I'm on the field, I want to, you know, the people that's watching, the people that's there, whether you're watching on TV or whatever, I want you to feel my passion, feel my energy. Like, because I'm a passionate player. When I get up and yell, I'm not doing that for show. I do that because, like, that's the energy I'm giving off right there. So I definitely want the people, the fans, my teammates to feel the energy, and I want it to be contagious.
I had a running back coach used to tell me, even though the quarterbacks get paid the most, people come to watch the running backs.
Oh, yeah.
Because you have the ability to truly electrify a game with any given play. As you think about this team and this construction, it's been intentional, right? You draft yourself, Malik Nabers, a year ago. You bring in Russ, who is one of the best deep ball throwers in the game. How close are you guys to being that explosive offense that we all know Dave's wants?
Yeah, I mean, we have shown it, you know, in off, I mean, not offseason, but preseason. Mm-hmm. We have, you know, got together in offseason, at Russ's. We have done everything. We have done everything that is needed to be that type of caliber offense. But we have to do it on Sundays, man. Like, I think we have the pieces to the puzzle, but, you know, who's to say we have the pieces to the puzzle when we don't go out there and produce?
Right.
You know, so I think on Sunday, like, when we go out there and actually do it, like, we can no longer just talk about we want to do this, we want to do that. We got to go out there and prove to not only, like, ourselves, but to the fans, man, right. like that, you know, the New York Giants, that we don't have that offense that can't produce mm-hmm. or that can't produce explosives. Or nah, we got an offense that can go out there and score points. We can score 30 points a game. Like, we need to prove that, though. We can't just say it. Right. We have to go out there and do it.
Right. You're getting people hyped talking about this.
Man, I mean, I'm getting myself hyped. I'm ready to go play right now.
I'm telling you. Look, you just said something that I find very interesting, and I've heard this all offseason, that Russell Wilson has accepted this role as the leader.
Yeah.
Right? He comes in with experience. He's had successes. He's had some failures. I mean, we can all remember what happened in Denver, and it was ill-advised, but I'm sure it's something he learned from.
Yeah.
But talk to me about Russell and how he integrated himself, like, so quickly into this team, because it feels like he quickly became the leader.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest, we really, especially offensively, we didn't really have that vocal leader, mm-hmm. you know, on the offense. Defense, you had, like, Brian Burns, Dex, but, like, offensively, we didn't really have nobody, right. you know? So we had people who was trying to do that, but there was really no presence in that leader position. So when he came in, it was kind of already just like given to him, but it was also like he took it and ran with it. Like he does a great job of like commanding the offense. He does a great job of like understanding who he's talking to and how he's talking to somebody, because like as a leader, you got to know how this person is going to respond right. to what you're saying. Like, some people is going to respond differently when you yell at them or get on them. You know what I'm saying?
Russ yells?
Russ don't yell. Russ don't yell. I'm lying. Russ don't yell. Russ is more positive, man. Like, he's always speaking life into you. Like, he's a big believer of, like, your words and, like, making sure that, you know, what he's saying to you is coming off as positive. So when you go out there and play again, he's going to hit you again. Whether you mess it up right. or you made a play, he's going to throw it to you again. He's going to hand it off again. He's going to do whatever he needs to make sure that, like, you are in a good headspace. And that's a really good trait when you talk about a leader.
What is Jackson Dart like in that way?
And like
in the leader, like in your experience with him, obviously you haven't had that much, but leadership wise, what are you seeing from Jackson Dart as a rookie so far in that?
I mean, from a leadership standpoint, I would say he's very confident. Yeah. I feel like he's a playmaker. Like outside of Russ and Jameis, he is that person, I would say, that's going to take that step next. You know, obviously, in the quarterback position, he has a lot to learn still. Right. But I think just from seeing him play in the preseason, seeing his energy, he's a dog. Like, and when you get a dog at a quarterback, man, everybody else is going to follow behind and, like, he's going to attract that energy. And I think that's what Dave's want. If you really look at the people he's drafting, we all dogs. You got me, Malik, Tyler Newbin, Drew Phillips, Darius Musau. Like, everyone he's bringing onto the train, like, dog. We all have that like dog mentality, whether we're up 20 or we're down 20. Like, I think a great example is when we was playing in Dallas last year.
Right.
We was losing. I think it was like maybe 2 minutes left, but we was doing 2 minutes, and me, Theo, Malik, we all making catches trying to go score the ball. Like, you know, it's the effort that we give, even no matter what,
right.
like no matter what's going on. If we're playing, like, we are going out there to kill and dominate. And like I said, that's just the energy, that's the vibe that we have in the locker room right now, and I think, you know, it's going to take us places.
And it gets you, it goes far when you actually have the talent around you.
Yes.
And the talent that everybody, and every single Giant fan in this crowd and those that are listening on the radio have been worried about is the offensive line.
Mm-hmm.
Assess where they are right now.
I mean,
obviously, we don't know about Andrew Thomas. We won't give that away. You can't give it away.
But do you know?
We'll find out.
If you do know, you can tell us.
I can't tell y'all.
Yeah. But do you know?
I think my PR team tells me y'all to go talk to Dave.
Do not get yourself in trouble.
Y'all got to go talk to Dave about that one.
Ignore that man. He's a Jet fan. But where do you feel like the line is?
I think we have a really, really good offensive line. Again, I'm going to give you examples from last year because, like, I've only been here 1 year. And when the O-line was healthy, you know, I was getting 100-yard games. You know, I was having a really, really good season. Then we started, you know, having injuries and started playing mismatch with the offensive line, putting people where they're not supposed to be or where they're just not usually playing. You know, then that's when, you know, things kind of went, you know, down south. But now we have a healthy O-line. We have the depth behind it to make sure that, like, if God forbid, knock on wood, anybody does get hurt, we have someone behind him that's just as good, that's going to come in and step in and play well. So I think that, like, man, I feel really good about our offensive line. I think they go against the best, you know, defensive line each and every day. So, like, when, you know, the game time comes, like, they're not going to blink. There is no bluffing, you know what I'm saying? Because we go against it every single day. So when they come out here on Sunday, I mean, I think they're going to produce, man. I really do.
When, and I'm sure someone will do this, they will come up to you and say, "Oh, big fan, Tyrone Tracy, I drafted you in the third round of my fantasy league." Do you roll your eyes, or are you very proud when someone tells you they're on your fantasy team?
He's on their fantasy team.
You know what I mean.
Yeah. Sorry. Raise the hands, how many people I'm on your fantasy team?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay. All right.
I'm raising my hand. Fifth round. It was a steal, Tyrone.
No, man. I mean, I appreciate it, man. I really do appreciate it. Each and every person who comes up to me and says something, like, to me, that's a dream come true because, like, you know, I remember being back home in Indianapolis, Indiana, like, you know, sitting on my couch, bro, dreaming of being in this position where I'm at now. So I really can't, you know, bat an eye or be upset when someone comes to me and say something. I'm like, bro, that's dope. Like, I try to have a conversation with you just because, like, bro, that really is super cool that, like, you pick me out of all these people to be on your fantasy team. Like, so I'm going to do my best to go out there, you know, and make something happen. But, like, if God forbid something happened, y'all cannot hit me in my DMs. Don't be doing that. Don't be hitting me up. Don't hit my girlfriend up. My mom. Don't be doing that.
Oh, that's funny.
I love that.
That's all right, great.
Last year, you had 192 carries. About an hour ago, Sean Morash, you're sitting on the end of the table down there, said Tyrone Tracy's going to lead the league in rushing.
I like that.
Okay, hold on. In order to do that, you're going to need to carry the ball at least 300 times. Mm-hmm. That's 108 more carries than you did last year.
That's a lot.
I mean, you're put together. You called me small last night.
I don't think I said small. I don't think that's the right word.
You said you're little, man.
I did. That's what it is. That's the word. That's the word right there. I said little. That's what I said. I said little.
Can you carry? By the way, I had 300 carries in each of my last 4 years.
Okay.
So just letting you know.
Just a little something.
So small guys can get it done, too. Can you carry the ball that many times? Like, if called upon. Obviously, you're going to be splitting some time, obviously, with Cam and et cetera. Motors there, too. So, but, like, do you see yourself as being the traditional every down back guy that's always in there, and can your body hold up to that?
Yes, me personally, I do. But realistically, when you're talking about where the game is at right now,
right?
I just don't see myself in there all the time, just because, where the game is at now, with the carries that I'm given and the touches that I'm given, why can't I, you know, lead the league in rushing or lead the league in all purpose, like? I don't put a limit on God's blessing on me. You know what I'm saying? Like, I think God can bless me in each and every way. I understand that, like, there is some things that I might have to go through to get there. You know, I have to take care of my body better. I got to recover. I got to do all these things as a professional. But at the same time, like, I think that, you know, I can really do it. You know, I really do. Hey. I believe in myself.
Hello, it's Lena Dunham. I host a podcast called The C Word with my dearest friend and historian of bad behavior, Alyssa Bennett.
What is up?
It's a chat show about women whose society is called crazy.
We're going to be rediscovering the stories of women society dismissed by calling them mad, sad, or just plain bad.
Listen to and follow The C Word with Lena Dunham and Alyssa Bennett. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
I think I can do it.
Wow. Adam Schefter tweeting out about 8 minutes ago now. Giants week one depth chart lists Jackson Dart as Russell Wilson's backup QB2.
Wow.
So let's have the conversation again. Forget
everything we just said. Start now.
Because that does change my thinking on things. Now, not as far as Dart going to be named the starter. I still don't think that's something they're itching to do anytime soon. However, now you could always still have, in the event of an injury, they just have Jameis Winston start and leapfrog. It doesn't mean that you're going to have Dart start immediately.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm a little surprised by this, that Dart would be QB2, which means maybe they're more willing to have him get into game action sooner than later. I was thinking more, okay, just have him for the most part until the season's over or next year. Maybe that's not the case.
This is very interesting. It shows that they've got a lot more confidence in where he is than even we thought. And we knew, or certainly surmised, that there was a good amount of confidence there.
Okay, so I remember saying right before camp started, and I wonder if this is the next step here, like, if you're going to have Dart, and he looks to be the right the right player.
You were saying cut Jameis.
Not about Jameis, but, like, why would you have QB3 if it was Dart, which we all thought it would be going into the season, and obviously during the summer, why would you have him be QB3 when QB2's barely getting any reps in practice? It's all going to be QB1. So, to me, that would just kind of retard his development from a practice perspective if he was the third quarterback. Dart. And now since it's the other way, now what I would say is, well, probably do the right thing by Jameis and let, you know, maybe cut, trade Jameis or whatever and let him go play football for, I take him on the Jets as a backup, actually. Yeah. The other thing,
if
so that was the
unhappy,
first thought.
Because you, if I'm the Giants, I'd still like to keep Jameis and his personality and leadership and veteran experience, all that.
Yeah,
I want to keep him in a room, but if he's not happy.
I do too, but I read something, and who knows, I saw something over the weekend where, and it wasn't like that there was a problem, but there was a little. I don't want to overstate this, so I'm not trying to make a big deal out of this, but and I'm not trying to misrepresent the situation at all. But there was like, and I don't want to use the word contentious, but I will, like a little bit of a contentious exchange between neighbors and Jameis, and wherever I saw it, they were talking about how that's a lot of energy from those two young men, which is a good thing. But when one of them's not the starter, is it worth it? So, I don't know. Maybe this is their way of eventually moving on from Jameis earlier than some people thought. The other thing, too, is if you're the number two quarterback, does that tell us that there might be some sub-packages starting early in the season
for
Jackson Dart, which we saw Brian Daboll throw him in there in the middle of the game. We're like, oh, and then we all thought, like, I guess that's it for Russell Wilson. Then the next – and he completed the pass. Then the next snap, Russell Wilson came back in. He wanted to see where he was mentally, and there was a lot of checkpoints that Jackson Dart passed this summer with his eyes shut way.
I could see that being the case, but that's a big difference than having him being ready to potentially start a game sooner than later. What happens? So now we'll go over the hypothetical again. What happens if the Giants start 1-5? You're telling me that now you're not going to consider going to the backup, the future of the franchise? If he's already QB2 and you're going to have him in games in certain packages, which I believe was the case from the beginning.
Yep.
But I always thought it was just going to be a one-off. All right, get him some game action, not do it all the time. Even as QB3, I did not think that they would want Jackson Dart to start this early. The fact that he's QB2 and going to be taking all those reps, I do think now he's closer to starting. Well, I mean, literally closer to starting because he's QB2 than if he were QB3. But maybe it can happen sooner than I was looking at beyond that bye week or week 11 with the Packers.
I don't think there's any doubt that we have to adjust whatever it was seven minutes ago.
Yeah, right.
And I brought up that Saints game, which is week 5 in New Orleans. And now
still,
that
you got the Eagles and Broncos after that. Like,
but they know that. Yeah. They know who they have, and we know who they have, and we know that it's daunting. I'm sure they do as well. The fact that he's quarterback number 2 going into the season opener tells me that they're not nearly as alarmed about this treacherous schedule, the things that we seem to be a little bit more consumed with. They evidently think the young man can handle it.
Or that they're not as married to Russell Wilson. Now, Daboll did say Russ is our starter. Okay, great. We understand that. So he's going to be the starting quarterback. But if something goes wrong, you know, whether it be injury or whether it be just poor performance or stale performance or whatever, then from this move, now I don't feel like they're as married to the plan of Russ is our starter. We're going to have a veteran backup and just go the Kansas City model with Jackson Dart. To me, that's now out the window.
I agree with you.
Where it feels like Dart may be a hit away from being
he might be playing by early October. Honestly, it feels very different than it did a few minutes ago.
I'm shocked by that.
Do we give them – all right, so let's give them credit for having a plan, ultimately, and being proactive and aggressive. And let's see if that plan ultimately is right. But is there an element – where you think this is a little reckless on the part of the Giants?
No, I'm going to have to trust Daboll to avert from the play. Hey, this is our plan, but we've been impressed with the kid so far. And again, he's not starting, nor should he for now.
But if Russ pulls a hamstring week 1, he's playing.
Yeah.
He's in. He's on the field week 1. Russ gets Denton. Go get him, kid. I mean, that's where we're at
that,
now.
And that's a scenario that, to me, it would be reckless.
Well, then you should view it as reckless as QB2.
Well,
quarterbacks get hurt.
Yeah. I mean, I guess, but there's no rule saying that you couldn't go with although Jameis is not going to be taking the second team reps. Yeah, I get it. I just, like, if it happened, I'm envisioning Russ at least staying healthy or being somewhat productive through the first, 7-8 weeks of the season.
Mm-hmm.
In the event that it's not, now you're throwing a rookie to the Wolves, I don't know. Even if Dart looked like he could handle it in the preseason, it would not be the model that I would follow. But I'm going to trust Brian Daboll in this spot, saying that he knows what he's doing.
Yeah.
But then they're going to be evaluated by how Dart, once he gets in there. See, to me, the definitive non-negotiable thing, you could say, well, Russell Wilson's supposed to be the starter, but now you're going to have Dart maybe sooner than later, whatever. Once you make the move to Jackson Dart, to me, that's it. He's your starter. I would never have him start, whether it be for injury or not, and then go back to Russell Wilson.
I'm with you.
Russ can lose the job due to injury. If he gets injured, Jackson Dart takes over. It's his team. That's it. This is the direction.
Yep.
So that's the one non-negotiable thing that I would have. I don't know if the Giants are going to have that in place or not, but that's what I would have. And then from there, then we can really fully evaluate what Jackson Dart's going to be with Brian Daboll.
The only caveat is once you go to Dart, I'm with you that he should be the guy. But there could be a situation where he's swimming and you have to save him for the betterment of the future of the franchise. Like
Volpe.
Yeah.
Throw him some swimmies.
Nose plugs too, right? That would be a fireable offense. Like, we're all of the mindset that there was some communication, Mara to Shane, to Daboll, get your quarterback, the clock restarts a little bit of a reset, no pressure to do anything cavalier now. You don't have to win 9 games to get back here and get a fifth year. Just show progress, show stability, draft somebody that you want, identify the kid in the draft, get him, coach him up, and show us some signs here. But if he goes out there and he looks completely overwhelmed, which I don't think he will, I'm just painting every scenario in real time, and he's overwhelmed, and the Giants keep running him out there, and it's getting, now it's counterproductive, well, then they could actually fire themselves.
Yeah.
Like, we think that that they've got this, that they avoided the silver bullet,
but there's
a scenario where if they destroy the kid in the first 5 weeks of the season, and I'm John Mara, I'm like, yo, what the hell do you guys, what just happened here?
Maybe I shouldn't be, but I'm actually shocked, just because I thought that they had a definitive plan. Keep him at bay. Let him learn. Let him sit and watch. The window's here for a reason.
Let's go.
Jackson Dart, QB2 already.
First couple of games is going to be really, really important to the Giants' success. We got some baseball to get into, two annoying losses with bad bullpens again, but still things relatively good for both of those teams despite the annoyance yesterday. Good morning, Boomer. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing great, Gio. And I'm glad football's here for sure. And I was thinking about the Giants and the Jets and opening weekend. And I know that the Jets and the Packers, that's going to be a huge watch television game on Sunday on CBS. But I think about the Giants and I think about how poorly they have opened their seasons over like the last 10 years. I think they're one of the worst teams when it comes to opening weekend losses.
I think they're one of the worst teams throughout the entire year. I think that the way it's worked out.
Well, you know, you try to break it down to the opening week. Who wants to get off to a good start?
Like, yeah, they never do.
I think Joe Burrow is 1-9 in the first 2 weeks of the NFL season. So they have worked very, very hard in Cincinnati to try to keep that from happening. So let's get a win opening weekend at Cleveland. And I would say that's the same for Brian Daboll. Let's go into Washington. Let's shock the Washington Commanders. Now, Washington's dealing with some injuries, and yeah, they've had some additions to this team. It's also one of the oldest teams in the NFL. And the one thing I will say about the Giants, and I think we've been saying it now for about a month, is that there's like a youthful exuberance and energy, even though their quarterback, Russell Wilson's older than everybody else on the team. Everybody else, I just feel like, is under 30. Everybody's excited. Everybody feels like they got some real juice now, especially on defense. And hopefully their secondary will hold up as long as the front four put on the pressure that everybody thinks is coming.
Yeah, I'm watching this game with two lenses tonight. The first is, you know, how good the Philadelphia Eagles are and the Dallas Cowboys and the game, you know, first game of the season, the excitement with that. But it's also, you know, where do I feel the Giants fit into this division when I'm seeing two of these teams play, and then you're also going to see the Commanders, obviously, on Sunday. So I know things change throughout the year, but I think the last thing that the Giant fan wants to see is a really competitive Dallas Cowboys team that either beats or plays the Philadelphia Eagles really well, because we've gone over it a million times since May when the schedule came out. If the Giants want to have a legitimate season, They cannot go 0-2 in the division to start the season. They've got to either win both of those games or they've got to split. So I think that they have a better chance of beating the Commanders week one than going down to Dallas, because they never go down to Dallas and play well. Now, I understand a lot of changes, a lot of different things. Micah Parsons would dominate the Giants' offensive line. He's not there any longer. New coach and everything else. But I do feel better, even though I'm not going to pick the Giants, I do feel better about them beating the Commanders and the Cowboys. But if you see the Cowboys just get absolutely waylaid in this game tonight, maybe you're starting to say, hey, maybe they can possibly go 2-0 to start this season in the NFC East.
All right, so remember, the Eagles started 2-2 last year, and then obviously went on to win 14 straight games under with Jalen Hurts at quarterback. And, you know, so two of those games came against the Cowboys, in which Dak Prescott did not play in those games. So Dak Prescott is 4-1 against the Eagles the last five games he's actually played in. So he is, you know, it's a quarterback-driven league. We all know that. I think Brian Schottenheimer was a smart pick for Jerry Jones. I guess they just got tired of hearing the same old stuff from Mike McCarthy, because it's essentially the same coaching staff with the exception of a new defensive coordinator, Matt Eberflus.
That's right.
So I don't know. I think they're going to be more competitive, just like I think the Giants are going to be more competitive. And I think that the Eagles and the Commanders benefited from the injuries that both the Giants and the Cowboys suffered last year. So if you just think back to last year and why the Cowboys and why the Giants were so bad, and then you look to this year and you say, okay, how did they improve? Well, they've improved at the most important position on the field. Both of their quarterbacks are going to be healthy. One is a little bit more seasoned than the other, but both Russell Wilson and Dak Prescott coming into the season are healthy and should be able to generate more offense for their respective teams.
Yeah, and the Philadelphia Eagles have a real good chance of repeating. It's so hard to do in the NFL, but this was one of the better teams we had seen in the last decade or so, when you broke everything down at the end of the year and who they beat in the Super Bowl and how impressive they were on both sides of the ball. So this is a team that is not like, they didn't just fall into a Super Bowl championship last year. You know, they beat teams. They were really good. They were solid in every single phase. So, you know, if they're right back there again this year, it's not going to be surprising as long as they stay healthy. But they're just a group that's just so solid, one of the best rosters in the league. They continue to draft well. They continue to do great in free agency. And if they don't win the division again, it's going to be because they had a rash of injuries.
It'll be interesting to see how Howie Roseman fills some of the holes that were left by free agency on defense. They lost five guys on defense from last year. Most of their guys, of course, the two big tackles in the middle are sitting in there. Their secondary should be solid. The question is, you know, they lost, I think, Josh Sweat and Brandon Graham. So, you know, what is their pass rush going to look like?
Well, Brandon Graham was out for almost the entire year last year, and they were able to sustain that. So
Hassan Reddick is gone. I mean,
he was gone last year too.
Yeah, right? I mean, it's just so. I mean, they've gone through it. But the thing about Howie Roseman is he's got an innate ability to be able to fill holes with guys that come out of nowhere, like Zach Bond. I come out of nowhere and all
Cooper
of a sudden,
DeJean.
Yeah, well, that was a draft choice, but I would say that finding those guys that, you know, not a lot of people see what he sees or his front office sees, is pretty amazing what they've done. And of course, they do have an offense that is loaded at pretty much every skill position.
Yeah, I mean, it's just amazing what he's been able to do. He's the Theo Epstein of football. He is the best executive in the game. He's someone who shouldn't be questioned with letting guys go and picking guys up, because he's just got this incredible resume. He's doing it better than anybody right now. So that they're just going to be a team that's going to consistently be there. If they have injuries, that's a different situation. But this is one of the tougher divisions in football. If the Giants could actually figure it out and be a real competitive team, this could be, you know, one of the top two or three tough divisions in the game. It really could be if the Giants figured it out. Because, you know, you've got the AFC West, very good division, we know that. The NFC North, very good division, we know that. Those are two that are certainly better. You could say, well, the Browns stink, but there could be three good teams in the AFC North. But if the Giants were I'm not on board with you and Jerry and some of the other Giant fans that are thinking that they could maybe win seven, eight games somewhere around there.
But if they did, I mean, the NFC East could be a little bit of a bitch.
Yeah, I mean, again, both the Cowboys and the Giants lost significant play time to top-end players who are making most of the money. And when you lose those guys, you're going to have losing records. The Eagles could lose one of those guys or two of those guys, and then all of a sudden things change pretty rapidly in the NFL. And that's why we often see a worst-to-first situation. I'm not saying the Giants are going to do that. I don't think the Giants are going to do that, but I do think so much more competitive. I think there's a lot more on the line for Brian Daboll now than ever before. I'm not sure, you know, how John Mara is viewing this season. We haven't really heard from John, so we don't know. I'm assuming that, you know, this is going to be it for him and Joe Shane. But again, if you look at the transition over the last 3 years and what this roster looked like when they got here to what it looks like now, I feel like I got to give him a chance at least with Jackson Dart a couple years.
Yeah.
Assuming that the season doesn't go haywire and they end up 4-13.
Yeah, and this is going to be, of course, a huge talking point throughout the entire season. But, you know, how itchy with the trigger finger is Brian Daboll and Joe Shane going to be in putting Jackson Dart in there? Clearly, they're in love with him. I trust Brian Daboll's instincts when it comes to the quarterbacks, but there is no doubt that Brian Daboll loves this kid, understands that he is up against it. His career as a Giants coach is against the wall right now. And the best way to keep that job is to have Jackson Dart come out and look like the guy who's going to be here for 15 years.
Well, I mean, it'd be interesting to see how they do their first five games, you know, and whether Russell makes it through and what their record looks like. You know, it's interesting. We know that the Giants are the team with the toughest schedule, at least on paper. But the Eagles have a tough schedule. The Cowboys have a tough schedule. And Washington has a tough schedule because of the crossovers and where they all are. The Eagles are, I believe, the first team in NFL history to have actually 10 previous playoff teams on their schedule.
10 previous playoff teams.
From last year on their schedule this year.
Meaning that they could play two of them, like the Commanders, they count as one or two.
That's two.
Okay. All right. Well, it's one.
They got the Commanders, Broncos, Lions, and Rams at home.
Okay.
And then on the road, they got Commanders, obviously, Packers, Chiefs, Chargers, Vikings, Bills, and Buccaneers.
What the stat pack should say is 10 games against playoff teams. Not
10 playoff teams.
Yeah. 10 games against teams that went to the playoff.
Well,
that damn stat pack's letting you down already. So we haven't even played a game yet.
But it's just given me a flavor of what is in front of the Eagles. Everybody, and by the way, they're the hunted. So when you're playing the Eagles, you realize you're playing the Super Bowl champion. You know, that week is a little bit special as you're preparing for that team.
Yeah, I mean, and they've been there because of, well, if you think about it, you know, going into last year, Nick Sirianni, you know, he was on such the hot seat prior
to
last year.
Which is unbelievable.
To think about that, having, you know, the success that he had had. And then, bang, here he is as a Super Bowl champion and someone who is now, you would think, has some of the best job security in the game. And, yeah, I mean, they've been the hunted before in recent memory, you know, with Doug Peterson as a coach. Now they're the hunted again with Nick Sirianni as a coach. And they're one of the big favorites in the NFC once again. I think the Lions take a step back with all those coaches that they lost. I mean, I understand that.
And plus, the division's tougher now.
Yeah. I mean, it was tough last year, too.
What about
the
Vikings?
Yeah. I mean,
Are they a better team? Other than J.J. McCarthy.
Yeah.
Do you feel like what they did in the offseason made them a better football team?
Yeah. I think that the offensive linemen that they signed, on paper, they've got the best offensive line that they've had in a very, very long time.
How about their defensive line?
Yeah, I mean, they love the two young guys that they brought in. That's why Harrison Phillips was expendable. So, their personnel up front, their front seven on defense, I do trust. And it's also, I mean, Brian Flores has been able to do a lot with guys that you wouldn't expect to have Pro Bowl-like seasons, and all of a sudden under him end up showing up and doing great things. So, yeah, the roster, I think, is very, very good. It's just that you got Jordan Addison, who's suspended for the first couple of games. Justin Jefferson dealing with an injury early on, and a quarterback that I have no idea what he's going to be.
In a quarterback-driven league, that's the million-dollar question right there for your Vikings. Anyway, yep. And I don't know. I mean, obviously, every single quarterback in a league is under immense pressure to perform, to keep their jobs, to put the ball in the end zone. Given what the Vikings went through last year and how well Sam Darnold played up until the final two games, I was trying to think, like, of all the quarterbacks that are coming into this league and stepping into the role for a particular team. I think, and I feel like J.J. McCarthy is under the most pressure to
perform. Guy's going to suck in the NFL. He just right, is. There you go. He doesn't have it. I'm just telling you right now, you can smell it.
Oh,
I mean,
smell that?
Yeah.
That's what that smells like?
I've been smelling it for 2 years. I mean, I will say the two things, and listen, he's my guy now. I got to have his back, even though I don't think I've never liked the pick. But he is, as far as situations go, you can't make any excuses because he had a full year to watch, full year to see that offense be great, and he is under one of the great play callers in the league with some of the best offensive weapons out there with a great offensive line.
And this is exactly what you want for Jackson Dart.
Yeah, and they don't have that quite yet, but they're close. You know, they're very close. But, I mean, Andrew Thomas being healthy is such a huge factor there.
But the
there.
Point being is that this is what you've been advocating.
Yeah.
Like, you J.J. McCarthy probably would have started the season as the starter last year. At least it was trending that way when they first got him.
Yeah.
And they had, you know, I think they added Sam first. Then they had Sam mm-hmm. first, and then they drafted J.J. McCarthy. But that was the scenario that's the Kansas City model.
The Kansas City model.
Right. So,
yeah.
But the Vikings did the Kansas City model due to injury.
That is correct, which could be the best thing that ever happened to him. So, I mean, I feel.
So now it's the Vikings model.
And, well, we'll see. I mean, let's see if it works. I mean, I don't know. He didn't have to do a lot at Michigan. He's going to have to do a lot here. I mean, that's just what it comes down to. I mean, they had one of the best defenses in college football. They were able to run the ball. He made clutch plays when he had to. This is going to be more about him and what he can do now. And that's really the big issue that I have. But with Kevin O'Connell, he's made everybody who's played under him look better than they should be. So maybe that happens with him. But he's my guy now. What am I supposed to do?
Hey, man, he's a first-round draft pick.
He's my guy.
He's supposed to be a pure player.
I'd rather be wrong about that. For God's sakes, if he's the quarterback that is there for a decade or more, I'd be thrilled.
I mean, that division is just absolutely loaded.
It is. It's one of the best.
You got the youngest team in the NFL in the Packers.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a quarterback that everybody now thinks has got to, he's got to take the next step.
Yeah, we're going to see how much better the Bears are. If they can't figure it out offensively with Ben Johnson and Caleb Williams, then they're never going to figure it out offensively. But yeah, that's going to get Monday Night Football. Vikings and Bears get those two teams right off the bat playing each other. But it all, of course, starts tonight with a couple NFC East teams, and Giants fans are going to be focused in with the Eagles and the Cowboys, and they get to see the Commanders on Sunday.
Hello, it's Lena Dunham. I host a podcast called The C Word with my dearest friend and historian of bad behavior, Alyssa Bennett.
What is up?
It's a chat show about women whose society is called crazy.
We're going to be rediscovering the stories of women society dismissed by calling them mad, sad, or just plain bad.
Listen to and follow The C Word with Lena Dunham and Alyssa Bennett. Available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Evan Roberts. Tiki Barber. It's Evan and Tiki on WFAN, The Fan, 101.9 FM, and always live on the free Odyssey app.
To those who celebrate, I want to wish everybody a very happy new year. And I don't mean radio new year. I mean the day in which you send your kids to school. In fact, it's not New Year's. It's Independence Day.
Stop it.
So I want to wish everybody a very happy Independence Day.
My kids are still home. What are you talking about?
What?
Yes. They don't go till Thursday.
That's ridiculous. That's a crime against, everything. Well, I sent my kids to school today. Sean sent his kids to school today. So everybody out there who was able to do so, congratulations. It's a very happy day. It's also the day where we're all back together. We got a lot to talk about. We'll get to the Mets a little bit later on. The Yankees begin this very, very important stretch, and the American League East is well within their grasp. We'll get to the Jets in a second. But breaking news in the last few hours, Jackson Dart is QB2. Now, let me start off with this basic question, Tiki.
Mm-hmm.
The unofficial depth chart has him at number two.
Yes.
What does that even mean?
Nothing, really. Nothing at all. It means that Jackson Dart has done enough to show that he is not a liability if he should have to play. If he had to become a player, if Russell Wilson got hurt and he had to come in and play for the New York Giants, the Giants trust him to be able to do that theoretically.
Right.
That's what that means. I mean, in some ways, it's actually really good for Jackson Dart because he will take second team reps for the Giants in preseason, in the regular season practices. It now pushes Jameis Winston to that emergency quarterback role. He'll still be dressed, so it doesn't really make that huge of a difference. But I think it's just honestly, it's a testament to how well Jackson Dart played this preseason and how much faith they had in his growth from being drafted in late April to playing through the preseason and now leading up into the regular season. Again, it's mostly semantics. It doesn't mean much other than the fact that if Russell Wilson gets hurt or is unavailable, then Jackson Dart will be the first quarterback to step into the game.
And to me, that's the biggest deal. I mean, we could be 5 days away from Jackson Dart making his NFL debut, and that's not something I would want to do. And that's not a knock on how he's looked in the preseason or if he's ready or not.
Right.
It's just that I think the Giants have been in this great spot where they could take it easy. They can take a deep breath.
Well,
they can
allow. They're still going to do that, though.
Right, but by him being the backup, they're one, you know, Andrew Thomas not playing, defensive end doesn't get blocked, Russell Wilson gets thrown to another country away from Jackson Dart being forced into a divisional battle week one.
Okay, so now if that happens, Jackson Dart has to step into a game, and we're, as Giant fans watching this, are you upset? Or are you kind of intrigued?
Upset is not the right word. I wouldn't be upset. It's not what I would want to do, though. I still think the best course of action with this young quarterback is to really take your time.
True.
Because the Giants are in a position to take their time.
They are in a position. That's what they crafted this quarterback room to do, to put them in position so that they didn't have to rush Jackson Dart into a starting situation early, potentially get him, I don't know, ruined or whatever you want to say because he doesn't understand the level that he's playing at. But it didn't seem like any of that was the case in the preseason.
Because it's the preseason.
Of course it's still the preseason. But the way he was able to pick up and process and do all of those things that you have to do in the preseason, it gave you faith that he was going to be okay. Is not swimming in it like some of these other young quarterbacks that we've seen over the last 15 years or so that get thrust into these quarterback roles. Here's the best way to think about it, Evan. Because I remember this from my rookie season. When we started playing in the preseason, and I was taking second team reps because obviously it was Rodney Hampton and Tyrone Wheatley. Those were the two guys. But I would get the second team, the third team reps in the preseason games, and it felt easy. You know, I'm not saying it was easy. I'm just saying it felt like, man, I got this.
Right.
I can do this. This isn't as hard as everybody said it was going to be. So in my mind, like in my subconscious, I'm saying, this is easy. I got this. That's what it looked like for Jackson Dart. And so ultimately my rookie year, Hamp got hurt. Tyrone Wheatley was I don't know what they thought about him, but I ended up starting basically. And it felt easy for the first couple of games. And then I got hurt and then it changed. But I think Jackson Dart is in a position where he made it look easy. Therefore, you have faith that if it gets harder, he'll be able to adjust. That's what I take away from Jackson Dart.
And Brian Daboll, who is – what's so interesting about Brian Daboll, and I want to play you a clip from just yesterday. Daboll was asked this exact question, who's the backup quarterback? It's one of the more intriguing things going into the start of the season. We already know who the starting quarterback is.
Right.
So you look at that quarterback room, which still features Jameis Winston and Jackson Dart, and it's natural to say, who's the backup? And so I was watching this earlier this morning because I was curious. And my opinion was, as I'm stating, I would have Jameis Winston as my backup. I'd have Jackson Dart as the third stringer, and I would continue to take a deep breath and take my time.
Mm-hmm.
Listen to Brian Daboll's answer to a very straightforward question on who the backup quarterback would be.
Since you are on to Washington week, have you decided who the number two quarterback on game day will be?
Yeah, any roster decisions based on, you know, who's going to be the backup or who this player is going to, like, we'll have that out there on Sunday.
Okay, a couple of things. You could answer the question, but why tell us it's going to come out on Sunday, and then 24 hours later, there's the unofficial depth chart that tells us the answer?
It's all gamesmanship.
It's all...
Gamesmanship with who? Us or the Washington Commanders?
The Commanders.
Oh, okay.
Not with us. I mean, I'm going to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I know this might hurt some radio host's feelings. Brian Daboll gives zero you-know-whats about anything that we say or think.
But does he care about the guy who buys a $400 train ticket to go down to Washington, D.C. / Landover, Maryland to watch the Commanders against the Giants?
Hey, let me ask Sean a question.
Sure.
Hey, Sean, let's bring you into this conversation. If Jackson Dart was the third-string quarterback, would you still buy a $400 ticket and go down and sit in Mark Simone's box at Washington?
You're damn right. If Jameis Winston was starting Sunday, I'm going down and spending that money.
Now, let's not get nuts. If Jameis was starting, you'd be rioting.
I might be calling asking for a $340 one.
How does an unofficial depth chart leak then if the head coach said 24 hours earlier, you'll find out Sunday?
I'm going to guess that the beginning of every week, because this happens for the broadcast teams, you get a flip card. You've seen those flip cards.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, you get a flip card. And the flip card has, in essence, the depth chart on it, even though that depth chart might just be what was thrown on the flip card. And so I'm going to guess, because this is not coming from Dave's, this is not coming from Pat Hanlon, this is not coming from anyone associated with the New York Giants. This is a flip card that someone got to look at. And now they're saying, Jackson Dart's the second team quarterback. Hey, he's second on the flip card. We'll know what he is come Sunday.
So he still may not be the backup on Sunday?
Actually, we'll probably know Saturday.
Right. You know, I just being a detective on this, because again, there's a difference between my opinion and what I think is going to happen. Same with you, Tiki's opinion, yep, versus what's going to happen. My opinion, and when we've talked about this throughout the summer and spring, I'm pretty consistent. I would not start Jackson Dart ideally at all this season. I would let him sit and learn. I think the data shows that quarterbacks who wait are more successful than quarterbacks that are thrown into the fire.
Except for Jaden Daniels and C.J. Stroud, the two last rookies of the year.
Yeah, but you just named two specific examples that are recently and they worked out.
It just happened because okay, this is the evolution of college football. Now, by the way, as an aside, real quickly, and this is for literally 5 seconds, college football sucks.
Yes, it does.
It is a bad watch.
Yes, it is.
Because you don't know who's good. You don't know who sucks. And even the good teams suck.
That's a good point.
So college football is bad. Now keep going.
Thank you.
College football has become a little bit closer from operation-wise, from preparation-wise, from depth of playbook-wise to what the NFL is. And so you're starting to see some of these young quarterbacks understand it a little bit quicker. You know what I mean?
So you're saying that's more of a reason for them to start right away?
No, I'm just saying it's more of a reason why we're seeing immediate success.
I got you.
From some of these. Some of these kids are not. Some of them still stink the first couple of years.
But you know what I think is unrelated to this? Most teams who draft young quarterbacks with high promise are bad. And when you're bad, you're desperate. And when you're desperate, you start a young quarterback right away.
Right.
Now, while the Giants may still be bad, they've got a lot to prove, they also signed a potential future, Hall of Fame quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
They're in an odd position where their quarterback room is strong. So unlike a lot of teams who are forced into action, like the Texans were forced to start C.J. Stroud. It worked,
right,
but they didn't really have any other option. The Giants are in a spot where they can take their time. I'm just telling you, and I felt this way when the Jets have drafted young quarterbacks, I feel this way a lot. I would give my young quarterback time. But the tea leaves I'm reading, and you tell me you're close to the action now, is that Brian Daboll can't wait to start this guy.
Well,
he loves Jackson Dart. It's his favorite toy. And I think there's a chance we see him before mid-November.
Right. So for Houston, it was Davis Mills or C.J. Stroud.
Right.
What are we talking about? It's going to be C.J. Stroud. For Commanders, I forget who was the backup last year.
Oh, great question.
I don't remember.
But the Commanders.
Oh, it was Marcus Mariota, right?
Yes, that's right. Mariota or Jaden Daniels.
That's my point.
And so the Giants are not in that situation.
Exactly.
And so I don't think, just to answer your point, I don't think that Brian Daboll wants to see Jackson Dart play. But I do think this creates a phenomenal opportunity if, for instance, the game is out of hand, one way or another. Doesn't even matter.
Right.
For the New York Giants. And you want to bring in your second backup quarterback.
You don't owe Russell Wilson his history and his legacy to play four quarters. Put Jackson Dart in for three or four series.
Right. That experience can help him in your mind.
And let him see real football, right? And so a real regular season football, because obviously he saw it in the preseason, but we know what that is. It's preseason. It's simple. It's cover one, cover three, cover two. It's basic stuff. Let him see real football. And if the game gets way out of hand. So I'm not saying that that's the design, but when you have him as your backup, if he is the backup on game day and not the emergency third-string quarterback, then that opportunity presents himself.
Right, but
if he's the emergency third-string quarterback, he can't play.
Correct. The other thing is, you know, we like to tailor-made when our quarterback's going to make his debut. I've already seen Giant fans do it. Look at the schedule. Ooh, the Saints, that's a soft landing spot. Completely get it. You just laid out a great example. If it's a blowout one way or the other, soft landing spot. Can I paint another scenario you that is absolutely on the table? For the first decade of Russell Wilson's career, he never missed games. The guy played. Well, over the last few years, that's changed.
True.
He had a calf issue last year. He missed the first 4 or 5 weeks of the season. Back in 2021, he had like a finger issue, and he missed 4 weeks of the season.
Right. That's what happens when you get old.
Of course. And I'm not calling him injury prone. I'm just saying bleep happens. When you also factor in Andrew Thomas may not play in this game, so who knows how much protection Russ is going to get.
James Hudson, let's go.
It is possible that Russell Wilson gets hurt. Like we saw with Aaron Rodgers 2 years ago. Bleep happens. There's a scenario where, unlike the soft landing spot you described of a blowout or I described of the Saints, that it's a 10-10 game at the half. Russ is hurt, and here comes Jackson Dart. And while that's exciting, and I'm not angry about it, would not be ideal.
Evan, you took the words right out of my mouth. Giant fans on the other side of the glass.
Uh-huh.
Would you not be thrilled to see that? Yeah, even if it was a disaster.
I would be pumped up. But I think the Giants know that. I think we're not thinking about the other scenario that's going to unfold here. And they trotted this out in the preseason, and we should have saw the warning signs. They're going to play Jackson Dart on Sunday. They're going to play Jackson Dart versus Dallas. They're coming up with package plays for him, which has become a
really?
Phenomenon. He presents a different style of offense than Russell Wilson moonballing it out. His run ability, his physical ability. I'm not telling he's going to go play 20 snaps at quarterback, but he will run on and off the field, and you will see five snaps on Sunday where Jackson Dart is on the field. They've already tested this in the preseason,
seeing
if he's ready to come off the bench. Those signs are there.
And remember, the Cardinals back in the day did that, but in reverse. Matt Leinart was a starter, and Kurt Warner would come in for package plays, and then he just outplayed Leinart and became the starting cornerback.
I kind of forgot that. I forgot that Matt Leinart Arizona thing.
Yeah.
Because that's what everybody thought he was done. Like he was washed. Kurt Warner,
yeah.
But he wasn't, obviously. He led him to a Super Bowl. I didn't even think about it in that regard. But that is unconventional. That would be innovation in a way that we haven't seen. I think maybe. Did Baltimore do that a little
with
bit?
Lamar with Jackson? Lamar Jackson.
San Francisco did it with Colin Kaepernick. He actually had a big run against the Jets. I'll never forget that.
That's true.
And they used him in select packages. I don't know
But those were completely different quarterback situations.
Yeah, I don't think that's necessarily what's going to happen.
No.
I think it's more Daboll loves this guy. I think that's obvious. And I think he wants to elevate him, and he wants to fast-track him. Like, my opinion is far different than I think Brian Daboll's going to do. Yeah. I think he wants him to be the starter by November.
But is there anything wrong with that? If they believe truly that he's ready. And here's the problem with young quarterbacks on teams like the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
Teams that have been bad the last couple of years, 3 wins a year ago, but crushed the offseason. Like, retooled some of the offensive line. They brought in tons of talent on the defensive side of the football. They already had some talent on that side, anyways, over the last couple of years. And so we think, oh, they're just going to stink again. But what if they don't? Right? What if they're actually pretty good? What if they aren't a sieve defensively and are able to limit teams to, I don't know, two or so scores per game, and they can win games by being just very decently good on offense? And if that becomes the case, doesn't it behoove you to start that process now,
well,
as opposed to being a crappy team who throws a young quarterback who's going to struggle, kind of like in Carolina, what they did with Bryce Young, right? So doesn't it feel like the opportunity is greater here than it is for most situations where the team was bad and drafted a young quarterback?
Well, you said a minute earlier, is it a bad thing if they get him on the field right away? I do want to answer that. Now, WFAN NFL football is powered by Verizon. It's a bad thing if it fails, Like, we sit here now knowing Daniel Jones failed, knowing Zach Wilson failed, right, knowing Sam Darnold failed. And so it's easy to sit back and say, here's why it failed. I'm telling you in real time that based on the experience of Sam Darnold, based on the experience of Zach Wilson, to a degree Daniel Jones, but it was different.
Right.
I would rather have my young quarterback learn. I'd rather not throw him into the mix. Now, history will tell us, or the results will tell us, if it was the right thing or not. I'm sitting here telling you, based on the experience that I have as a football fan, I would rather err on the side of, I'm going to be really conservative. I'm going to be really patient. Because if he is thrown into the mix and he fails, and let's be honest, 70% of first-round quarterbacks fail. You can look it up.
Right, and that's regardless of whether or not they play right away or not.
But the fail percentage is high. We just have to admit that.
True.
Doesn't mean Jackson Dart's going to fail. It just means when you draft a quarterback in the first round, we all get excited, we all get hot and bothered, the fail rate is very high.
True.
If he fails, we'll look back at, hey, was he rushed too quickly? Mm. I'm just first guessing the whole thing and telling you that I'd be extra conservative. Anger's not the right word, Teak. I'm not angry. I ought to be angry. And I totally get why a Giant fan would be excited. I'm just trying to be reasonable. I'm trying to look at this from my experience of watching young quarterbacks get rushed into it and just clearly not be ready.
Yeah, but I think some of that also becomes the coaching situation.
Sure.
In Carolina, let's just go back to Bryce Young, who I just referenced.
Mm-hmm.
That was a terrible, terrible situation that they had with Frank Reich taking over. I mean, again, it's kind of like, unfortunately, the Jets situation when Gase gets fired, immediately takes another job. Frank Reich gets fired from the Indianapolis Colts, gets hired almost, I mean, really quickly to be the Carolina Panthers' new head coach, but he wants to win.
Right.
He has zero patience for a young quarterback, but they draft one anyways, and then are we surprised that he stunk? The answer is no.
It was a bad situation.
It was a terrible situation to draft a quarterback into. You look at the situation down in Houston with C.J. Stroud, and I've mentioned this multiple times, but you bring in what we didn't know at the time, but what we do know now, a very good head coach, right? A very good leader of men who has an offensive coordinator who had just spent the last three seasons tutoring young quarterbacks in San Francisco. Right, Bobby Slowick, right? Remember that. And so it was a perfect situation for him. And then you go to Washington, and this is the one that's closest to home, and it's the one that we're going to see in 5 days down in D.C., is you bring in a veteran, super respected head coach in Dan Quinn, who's remembered for the wrong reason in Atlanta, and he hires Cliff Kingsbury, who, by the way, in his last stint as head coach and offensive coordinator, had the Offensive Rookie of the Year, right, and Kyler Murray. And so it was the perfect situation in Houston. It was the perfect situation for Jaden Daniels in Washington. And I'm biased, obviously, because I'm close to this team, especially close now. But I feel like this is a good situation for a young quarterback. And especially because he doesn't have to play. He's not like Zach Wilson was with the Jets.
Massive mistake.
Where he just said, all right, we're not even going to compete you with anybody. You're getting starting job.
The Giants situation, and I think I'm going to be fair in saying this, is not Frank Reich in Carolina. It is not an awful situation. But I also can't say it's perfect.
Well,
I can't say it's Houston or Washington. I mean, the jury is still out on Kafka and Dable. And this is going to be how the jury decides, ladies and gentlemen. The jury's going to decide based on this.
True.
Based on Jackson Dart.
Right, you're right. But again, I happen to believe that Brian Daboll is a very good head coach. I happen to believe that Mike Kafka, despite the, I'm not going to call it butting of heads, but whatever the situation was with him and Dabes 2 years ago, it notwithstanding, that he's a good offensive coordinator. There's a reason that he keeps getting offensive coordinator head coaching interviews, even though he didn't call a play a year ago. You know what I mean? And so I'm choosing to believe that they have the right situation around their quarterback room, and it feels like Jackson Dart is in the right situation. Again, what happens on the field, whether he's playing or not, is going to determine all of those things that I just referenced. But I think that this Giant situation is right for a young quarterback to develop and grow into.
We'll get your calls coming up, 888-808-1019. Just a few days until real football. Jets Steelers at MetLife on Sunday. Giants Commanders down in Maryland slash DC on Sunday. We will play a piece of audio that may alter Tiki Barber's entire NFL season in just a few minutes. But let's get to a few of your phone calls reacting to Jackson Dart being the backup as he's fast-tracked to eventually take over as the starting quarterback of this team. 888-808-1019. Zach is on Long Island. Good afternoon to you, Zach.
Zach, what's up?
Hey, how's it going? I appreciate you guys taking my call. My reaction, first off, is hell yeah. Why not? Let's go for it. I mean, we know what Jameis is. We know what Russell is. I mean, let's do this thing. Real quick, you guys posed a question. Are we excited about Jackson Dart in general right before you guys broke for commercials?
Yep.
I feel like this is some kind of excitement that we haven't felt in a long time. When Daniel Jones was selected, obviously a lot of us were taken back. I chose to be optimistic and say, hey, let's give this guy a chance. Let's see what he can do. A little high for what we thought he would go, but at the same time, he's our quarterback. Let's try and support the guy. But the excitement that we have with Jackson Dart is on a completely different level. I can't tell if it's because of the capital that we spent compared to Daniel Jones, that's why we're more excited, or it's just the moxie this kid has, or the cojones. Yeah.
I think it's the latter. I think it's the presence that he has. He feels like he's in control of every interview. He speaks the right things. He says the right things. We saw it in the preseason games. But I got to be honest. I think the reality of the Daniel Jones situation is that he played at Duke. And
you nailed it, bro.
And it was like,
I was waiting for that. People didn't like Daniel Jones.
No. By the way, I love Daniel Jones because he came and visited me and BT
right
the year before he got drafted, and he was such a nice kid. I was like, I love this kid. I hope he does well. And then he gets drafted by the Giants.
Right.
And so I think most fans were like, Duke?
Yes.
What did he do? And they weren't even good. So I was like, what did he do at Duke?
And now
he's smart. He's big. He's a really good athlete. He's got a good enough arm. Like, all of those things were the reality of him, but it didn't feel exciting.
No, not at all. And I remember back to the reaction that drafting Daniel Jones had, the reaction Jackson Dart being drafted had, the reaction that Jet fans had for Sam Darnold, Zach Wilson. They were all very different.
Yes.
Like, in the case of Sam Darnold, there was universal excitement. In the case of trading up for Jackson Dart after drafting Abdul Carter, it's not that long ago, so we don't need to think that hard, but people were excited. I mean, most Giant fans were like, this is awesome.
And by the way, it really wasn't that much to come back up and get him.
It wasn't. The only negative from some, and I had it to a degree, was, hey, I like Shedeur Sanders more. But then we witnessed Shedeur drop round after round after round. In the case of Daniel Jones, and I'll never forget coming on the radio after that draft,
right,
90% of Giant fans were pissed off.
Of course they were. Now, let's not revise history. Daniel Jones had a pretty good rookie season.
He did.
Threw for over 3,000, 24 touchdowns. It was the interceptions. It was the fumbles. Like, those things soured you a little bit. But nobody's going to sit here and say in 2019, going into the 2020 season, you were saying Daniel Jones can't be an NFL quarterback. I mean, he didn't have a moniker of Danny Dimes at Duke, because he didn't do that at Duke. The things that got him that nickname in New York were real.
Yeah.
Right? I mean, he pushed the ball downfield. The problem is he was from Duke. It's a shame, but it is what it is.
We are all human, so I want everyone to be very open-minded when you hear this clip. We're all human. We're affected by what people say about us.
Hello, it's Lena Dunham. I host a podcast called The C Word with my dearest friend and historian of bad behavior, Alyssa Bennett.
What is up?
It's a chat show about women whose society is called crazy.
We're going to be rediscovering the stories of women's society dismissed by calling them mad, sad, or just plain bad.
Listen to and follow The C Word with Lena Dunham and Alyssa Bennett, available now wherever you get your podcasts.